Welcome to Interviews with Kimmy Rose and Donna Visaki, a lively and provocative conversation with some of the most dynamic change makers of our time. Be inspired by today's top metaphysical experts, authors, and speakers in the mind, body, and spirit arena. Get ready to ignite your beautiful spark and release the power within. Call Kimmy and Donna now at 888-627-6008.
Welcome to Interviews. I'm Donna Visaki, and it's so nice to be with you today. Kimmy will not be with us. She had an emergency this morning or this afternoon, so she's not going to be able to join us today, but I'm delighted to be here and enjoying the weather in Colorado. We've had a blizzard all weekend. Here it is, middle of May, and we've got snow up to 3 feet in the mountain areas. So it's definitely springtime in the Rockies, and I have a feeling it's heading towards the east. So if that's where you're located, be prepared. It's a nice wet snow and that, but it's all perfect, I'm sure. And I have an amazing show for you today. I'm so excited to bring on our amazing guest this morning. His name is Nick Askew, and he was recommended to us by one of the gals from BBS Radio. I asked her, who would you like us to interview? And she recommended Nick Askew. He is the former managing director who took a U-turn to become a filmmaker and poet and has spent the last decade exploring the capturing of the human soul on film. His soul biography series is followed faithfully by many around the world. His insight on what it is that happens between the lens, the subject, and the viewer has profound implications for all. He's the creator of two film series, Soul Biographies, a timeless exploration of the deep human challenges we have and probably always will face, and The Soul of Business, an exploration of the conscious future of business. Nick travels the world helping foundations and movements articulate their courageous pathfinding notions, organizations find and express their soul, and most importantly, human beings express their pain, their joy, and much in between. Welcome to the show, Nick. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You know, I have been watching your films all morning, and they are amazing. Just so poignant and touching, and they have a beautiful message. So how did you become a filmmaker? Where did you go from you were a managing director of what, to making films, and how long have you been doing this?
Well, I was listening to your description, which of course was, you know, partially from the site, website, thinking, wow, you read the words out, and I didn't recognize the person at all.
It's like,
that's me. Oh, I remember that. I did that. Yeah. Oh. But isn't it just the way you try to describe someone and you just don't even get anywhere close? And I think that's essentially the point of catching people on film. You know, I call myself a filmmaker sometimes anyway, but I don't really. I make films. And really, they're not films as such. They're human portraits in black and white, very slow film. It's ready to catch a real sense of someone that you can't describe, the kind of the piece beyond words, and so you're, of course, that doesn't answer your question whatsoever. It just suddenly occurred to me, wow, that was me, really. That's a lot of words. It probably don't describe me at all. And but it was a rather unusual route there. But I think that's probably the way of everything, of most people getting anywhere. But I haven't trained in film, and I've never set out to be a filmmaker. I was just sitting down quietly in a hotel, and suddenly this idea arrived, as if from the ether. You got to make films. So I just borrowed a camera, and that was it. I've done nothing since. And that's been about over 9 years, between 9 and 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing it. So kind of stumbled my way through it at the beginning, although the stumbling was odd because there was no plan. You know, I know how to build a business. I know how to do all that. But this seemed something very different. And I think it was kind of pretty, you know, a decade ago, that was pretty unusual. In that, I think nowadays, many people are taking these large leaps of faith, not knowing quite what tomorrow will bring, but knowing that it's okay. And certainly 10 years ago, it felt a lot more, I felt a lot more unusual doing that.
I think you're right. I think people are being nudged, and we are getting messages from the ethers that we are to move in this direction and move in that direction, or to do this, and this is our calling. And it's pretty weird when it happens, and it's very unsettling. I know, and it happened to me 10 years ago. And moving into this a whole new arena in my life, and that it's kind of scary. So were you scared when you started off doing this, or just very confident in knowing that this is what you were supposed to do?
I never really, I've definitely got a sense of what knowing feels like. It's a very visceral thing. It's very different to wanting something or believing something even. And knowing is, an idea just arrives. It could be about anything, really, but the big stuff certainly. And then it's like, oh, it's one of those. I better do it. And so I was never very, you know. I'm not kind of rigid with ambition, and I never have been. So I've always been very comfortable being wherever I am. I've achieved a lot, I guess, in the context of things. But I never think, oh, I've got to be there, I've got to be a managing director of a company, or I've got to be this, or I've got to be that. I much, much prefer to know the sense of what I'm doing and know the way that I want to feel and do that. And then it's almost step one foot forward at a time without a huge master plan. Because I think huge master plans, in my experience, have kind of got in the way. They'll get you somewhere, and then you get there, and you go, oh, well, that's not it. I wonder what is. And so it seems this kind of perpetual motion towards something. And so at the beginning, I never really thought about it. I didn't think about what I was doing. I was just pointing a camera at someone and essentially listening to them, and then making a portrait, a film of what I saw. And I used to edit on feel. You know, people could say tell these hugely imaginative tales full of drama and stuff. And I'd just think, no, I can't put that in because it makes me feel flat. And it was just drama, and it wasn't useful to the world or to me. And then there were other passages of conversation where they weren't particularly interesting always, but there was something about them. There was a real presence there. So I'd always use that stuff. So it was kind of very quiet, but it made me wonder, you know, or full of wonder almost, and the nature of it. So that's what I started making films out of.
I think you have a knack for, you know, we tend to portray an image to the world of what we think people want to hear, or what we want people to see.
Yeah, of the last kind of 2 or 3 years, because I keep on getting asked the same question, set of questions all the time. You know, well, where do you find all these people? And they seem so relaxed and so cool and so themselves. And then I thought, well, that's an odd question, isn't it? And then I realized, what the asker of the question is actually meaning to ask is, or say, or state is, I can't see them. I can't see those people. And then, so I'm starting to really take it apart and go, well, what on earth is happening? And I realize that essentially what's happening is I'm witnessing people. In other words, I have no questions. You know, I have no descriptions of people before I film them. It doesn't matter, you know, whether they're extremely well known or no one knows them at all. I get sent books and films of people, and I won't read them or watch them because it gets in the way. There's like a space between people. And as soon as that's filled with ideas and notions of someone and opinions from elsewhere and needs to make a film in a particular way, you completely lose sight of someone. You can't see them. You can just see this kind of identity and the need that you want. And once you start making, what I'm making anyway, and trying to almost pander to an audience, going, wow, wouldn't it be great if they revealed something that was so dramatic, or the answer to everything. You see, my films have no answers in them. Well, how could they? Because I have no idea. And so wouldn't it be great to entitle a film something along the lines of the 7 top things you need to know to ... It would be seen by a lot more people, but it wouldn't be true. And so I'd rather fill the time, the space with just a kind of wondering and an exploration of stuff. And what I find is, I mean, it's really and it's not just in film, it's in every encounter, it seems so much more useful to the human experience to go into any encounter, any meeting, any conversation with someone, knowing absolutely nothing about where you'll go. Because as soon as you think you're trying to squeeze something out of a situation, like, I need to talk to you, Donna, because that could grow my audience. Like, I have no idea how many people are listening. It's like, I really don't. It doesn't matter, because the conversation wouldn't be any different. And if I'd worked out, you know, who was listening and what they might want, and whatever, I wouldn't be in the conversation. I'd be constantly thinking, wow, am I saying what's needed to be said to get them to, you know, do something that I want? And that's just incredibly tedious. Like, having to go through life the whole time trying to squeeze some kind of conscious or even unconscious result out of every moment is incredibly tiring. And so I'd rather not do that.
Oh, I love that. You know, you are so very honest. And the people, when you portray people in your films, they're vulnerable. They're almost vulnerable. And they open up to you in some way, which is amazing that they you get to this point where they're just being who they are, and it's beautiful to see that. So thank you for what you bring to humanity by showing these amazing portraits of people. I like the way you describe it, as a portrait of people, of who they really are. Because we are so afraid to let down that guard and show our true selves to people.
Yeah, and it's subtle as well. I mean, in the end, what I think people are looking at when they watch something that I made is that they're kind of looking at themselves. So it is kind of like a mirror. And I know that that's probably at least vaguely truthful, because that's what I feel when I make them. So I'm sitting and I'm listening to someone, you know, and we don't know where this conversation is going to go. We both get totally lost in it, not always lost. I was in Dallas last week filming actually a film about the nature of entrepreneurship by a guy who's been very successful. And of course, there's such an obvious way to approach that, you know, from the drama of here's a guy that's, you know, made $1 billion and he's going to teach you the way to do it. But what an incredibly dull approach to examining someone. So the conversation there, for example, and I'm still kind of reeling in the conversation, or the echoes of that conversation that we had on Friday, but the way that we approached it was just kind of went into it. No research. I didn't read anything he sent me. He sent me a lot. But I was intrigued by his definition of the word entrepreneur. And it was like, oh, entrepreneur's got this much broader definition, and underneath it all is this ability to make a decision to take responsibility for an outcome. And therefore it's a kind of democratization of the word entrepreneur, and it's almost like a state in which anyone can get to.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's kind of, it's so easy to go and go, well, oh, that's great, take responsibility. But that's just a notion of the mind. It's like a great idea that you can agree with. Who wouldn't agree with the fact that to take responsibility for, you know, whatever, fill in the blank, your life, all the aspects of your life, wouldn't be a good idea?
But I was wondering,
how do you get to that? How do you jump the chasm, which is the decision made in your mind, in your head, almost like agreeing with the notion, to something that's made much deeper, where you know, oh, that I've made that decision, and now it's just the way I am, because otherwise nothing transforms. Everything just changes for a bit. You know, I just put out a film last week on weight loss, strangely. I know it was like this woman I saw in Toronto. And it was about this continual, this perpetual demand to control situations and the fight that comes with that, fighting your waistline, you know, fighting all the elements that you think are in the way. And her observation of the fact that, oh, you really have to lose control, which is seems a very inhuman thing. But actually, it couldn't be more human. And it was the same thing. There's a decision made deep in the human experience, I think, in all aspects of life, which is about almost like surrender. And so when approaching this entrepreneurial thing, I was suddenly triggered to go down that road. And to be honest, totally honest, I'd forgotten the conversation completely. I got the sense of it. So luckily, I filmed it. Because I can make a film out of it now. So I'll go back into that conversation and there'll be all shades of, you know, cleverness and space and all sorts. And from that, I'm going to be able to make this portrait, one that shows the subject, the film subject,
mm-hmm.
and two, that is a contribution, something additive to the world, in that it's about a subject which we could all embrace and perhaps improve our lot, improve the experience of our
of our
moments in life.
Exactly.
Rather than just the physical lot of, well, I've got a bigger house and a faster car and all those, you know, things that we tend to look at.
But don't really matter.
Yeah, it's
yeah. And Nick, we have to go to a break, but we will be right back on interviews. We're talking to Nick Askew, filmmaker, amazing poet, and he creates portraits of life, basically. NickAskew.com is his website. We'll be right back on interviews right after this.
Want to stop smoking and just need a little help? Need to fit into those shorts? Hypnosis can help. Go to lightheway.com and see the many pictures of people who have lost weight and kept it off. We also sell CDs and MP3s. Call Light the Way at 734-854-1514. We do hypnosis for smoking, weight loss, anxiety, and many, many more things. Located just 5 minutes from Toledo in Lampertville, Michigan, Light the Way, guiding you down a better path. That's lightheway.com. Stop in or phone Light the Way for a psychic reading, massage, dream interpretation, Reiki, CCT, or hypnosis. Open 6 days a week and located at 8050 Sommerfeld Road, Lampertville, Michigan. We're just 5 minutes from Toledo, and our family's been operating for 18 years. We offer phone readings 24 hours a day by calling 734-854-1514. or visit lighttheway.com. Light the Way is still open, then you can call Kimmy or her mother Carolyn for a psychic consultation, astrology, massage, Reiki, CCT, or hypnosis at 734-854-1514. You can also pick up a copy of Kimmy's book, Wake Up Your Intuition, The Sun, Moon, and Venus, a simple guide on how to get the most out of your man, chicken soup for the power mom soul, and bless you book. We do telephone and in-person appointments. We are located at 8050 Sommerfeld Road, near the corner of Sommerfeld and Secker Road. Visit lighttheway.com.
Are you looking to live a more expanded and balanced life? Do you hunger for information about the mind-body-spirit connection? Hi, this is Donna, here to share how you can ignite your passion for expanded living with Bella Spark magazine. Bella Spark brings you informative articles on spiritual evolution, alternative healing, sustainable living, diet, nutrition, life after death, and cutting-edge developments on topics such as the quantum field and more. With each issue, Bella Spark magazine shares in-depth feature interviews with the most prominent voices in the spirit, mind, body arenas. Popular food bloggers bring you new and delicious recipes, and each issue provides the information, insight, and inspiration you need to reveal and nurture your own unique, beautiful spark. Subscribe today and get your first issue free, only $15 per year. Ignite your spark and live your life on purpose. Sign up today at bellasparkmagazine.com.
This is Kimmy. If you want to get a hold of me for a reading, a crystalline consciousness session, or Reiki, or you're interested in classes, come and visit me at Light the Way. You can go to LITETheWay.com or you can call 734-854-1514. That's Light the Way, LITETheWay.com.
And welcome back to Interviews. I'm Donna Vasaki here with you today on Monday. What is it? The 12th of May already. My gosh, time is flying by. We are here today with our special guest, Nick Askew. His website is nickaskew.com. He's an amazing filmmaker. And if you go there, there's these wonderful clips of portraits of humanity, of life, and that it's so enjoyable to watch. So welcome, Nick. Welcome back. Here we are again.
Thank you. I got to add that I haven't actually got a K in my name. So when you say nickaskew.com, it's N-I-C-A-S-K-E-W. There you go.
Got it. Got it.
Yeah. And I've also got some other sites as well, soulbiographies.com, but they generally most of my stuff is played on nickaskew.com. And actually, I haven't got that many. I've got about 40 films or portraits, and they're between anywhere between 1 minute and 10 kind of thing. But I've got about 150 up my sleeve, and I'm slowly putting them up. I've got a lot.
That's a lot.
I've made a lot.
That's you have made a lot. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I noticed, I know that you've traveled all over the world, and you've met people from different cultures in that. So how have you found people to be different in different areas of the world? And how are they the same? How are we all the same?
Well, you know, I can see that differences are so obvious. And, you know, I've traveled all my life before. I've canoed the Congo and the Amazon, and I've climbed mountains and crossed deserts and stuff. That's what I used to do before I accidentally got into business. and then not accidentally got out of business. And the physicality of us is so, it's kind of the thing that gets in the way. You know, like if you're sitting with someone who's totally blue, you think, oh, they're completely different to me. And so those physical differences kind of almost divide us. And they do exist. Of course, they kind of exist and you can see it. But I have this real sense, and I've always had this real sense that, oh, I'm looking at myself when I'm with someone. Not always, but a lot of the time. And so retrospectively, I pieced this together. So I just started making these films, and I got this huge visceral reaction from people straight away. I didn't know what I was doing. I was kind of unusual. I thought, really? Wow. And then I thought, then retrospective, I go, oh, so what I was really trying to do all along without knowing it was share what I see of people in the world. Because when you have this sense, not an idea that someone is very similar, you know, you're all inextricably connected. You know, that's a great idea. Wouldn't it be wonderful if? That idea stinks. I mean, it's a great idea, but it stinks because there's no experience of it. Therefore, it's just frustrating. So you look at someone and you go, well, I know I should love you and, you know, we should kind of do stuff together and just, you know, be selfless. But without the experience, it's just frustrating. So essentially, I think what I'm trying to do all the time is just hang out with people and notice that, oh, it's the same thing. What you face and I face is the same thing, and it's almost like we're looking out of the same eyes. And it's very subtle, and it's extremely hard to describe. You can't mm-hmm. describe it. You absolutely can't describe it. In fact, I remember there was a magazine in Hollywood, and or out of Hollywood, and they were going around, you know, maybe many of the same guests you had have had on your show. I recognize some of the names. And they were asking people who were working in all sorts of fields, what's important, significant to you? I think I can't remember the exact words. And you were allowed some like 600 words to describe it. And I thought I was going to take a really easy route. And I'd just say, oh, that'd be easy. I'll just write something on that. And I thought it would like take me a day. And as with sometimes happens, what I decided to do was use it as an excuse. And this was a few years back, to really articulate why I was making films and why, and all the stuff around films. And I started to write, and it took me about 3 months. It was terrible. It was like I had to ask myself the question, well, what on earth am I doing this for? And so, you know, I wrote a load of words, and I was probably trying to be too smart. And whenever that happens, especially in making films, if you try to be clever, it just falls apart completely, and you have to start again. And I ended up writing a very short poem called One Same Heartbeat. And I think there were like 60 words in it. And I'll read it. It's very short.
Okay.
Obviously, only having words. And I think it got to the sense of what you just asked. And of course, I've forgotten the question, but I remember the sense of it. And this thing is called One Same Heartbeat. And it starts, each of us stand seemingly alone as we cry out for evidence that we belong. And as we cry out silently through the actions of our everyday, we step further from our own sight, further from the experience of our one same heartbeat. But in the flicker of a single moment, we might remember that there are no separate lives and that we've never been alone. That's it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And so, what it kind of articulated for me, and I suppose I was writing it for me, as I make films for me, because that's all I can make films for. What I recognized is something about the experience of loneliness. I've never felt loneliness. kind of unusual. Took a little time to recognize that and then to even say it. I was like, oh, never. Always a part of it. And what I recognized around, like when talking with people and listening and observing all sorts of situations, is that is a huge human condition. It's like, it doesn't matter where it is. It's like someone feels like they're not part of it, and they're going to fight tooth and nail to be part of it, to deserve to be part of it. And there comes human dysfunction, you know, and it's very subtle sometimes, and it's very obvious other times, you know, wars. I suppose on the macro level and the micro level, it's like, if you don't feel like you're part of it, and you feel like there's someone you have to be to deserve to be part of it, you're going to act oddly and not for the good of all. You're just going to think there's not enough in the world, and I'm going to fight for what I need. And it's kind of odd. And I saw that. And I'm not saying that I don't. Sometimes I do. And I think sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. And I know this because, for example, I've seen the same look in the eye of pretty much everyone at a particular time. So if I'm filming, you know, I've filmed in a high security murderous ring in a jail, in a prison. And I've seen the same look in the eye of a guy in there as I had with some people you might call modern day saints. It's the same thing. It just takes a little notice. And mm-hmm. It takes all these ideas to evaporate, you know, because we're looking through these lenses of what we need in the world and our opinions and all these things. And when that falls away, you can see it. Right? And that's what I'm kind of attempting to do, not in all films, you know, because I make films on different subjects, but generally that's what I'm looking to do. It's like, I don't want someone to come in to make a film armed with their cleverness and all the research they've done over years and the answers. Because that's all I'll see on the film. Well, that's all anyone will see. They'll just see this huge, important person with all the answers. And that can't be. I mean, it does have a place, I guess, in some aspects, some respects. But I'd rather see someone and recognize that look. You know, that as I said, in the flicker of a single moment, we might remember that there are no separate lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of the importance to me of why I do what I do. It's like, oh, so if I can sit with someone and listen, you know, truly listen beyond just the words, really take what's there in, I cut out all the middlemen, all the things that I have to do. Like this person once called me up, I remember this distinctly. I'm sitting in my little studio in London, and someone calls up, and I pick the phone up, and they go, oh, it's you. And I go, well, of course it's me, it's my phone. And then we started having this conversation, and I think it went on, you know, perhaps an hour. And it was just about everything and nothing and all the bits in between, and I can't remember what on earth we talked about a few years back. And then they said at the end, they were going, oh, thank you for talking. And I just remember saying and thinking first, it's like, well, what are you thanking me for? We just had this wonderful conversation. Like, we both felt we were totally part of it, and there was nowhere we needed to be other than in this conversation. So we've essentially cut out the middlemen. You know, all the people search for that experience, and they work, you know, all the hours of the day to get themselves into a position where they can go away and have a conversation or an encounter or an experience like that. So we just cut out all the middlemen.
I love it. I love it.
I don't know if they got. I think they did. I think they were a little perplexed. But that's okay.
Beautiful. You just have an amazing perspective on life. And we have to go to another break, but we will be right back with this fascinating conversation with Nick Askew. Website NIC, Nick Askew, askew.com. And you can see a lot of his films on there. We'll be right back on interviews right after this.
Kids are going through challenges more and more these days, and Bedford Public Schools and the community has joined together to celebrate Bedford on Friday, June 27th, kicking off the evening with fireworks, and Saturday, June 28th with a parade, a color run, and Matthew Caracas from the band Citizen, Sam DiArmond, Chris Caracas, and others during the day to pay respect to the many kids who've passed away from Bedford Schools. And in the evening, there will be a concert, a tribute to the Eagles. Tickets are $7 to raise money for a Tree of Life to be placed in the courtyard at Bedford High School. Purchase tickets at Light the Way by calling 734-854-1514. Celebrate Bedford. Celebrate life. Are you interested in weekly guidance, classes, family retreats, and a support system that helps your family through the ups and downs of life? Go to KimmyRose.com and sign up for her weekly newsletter. Read articles that will lend support to your family and check out the weekly forecasts for you. Take a look at the week ahead. Kimmy Rose is the minister of Sanctuary of Light and dedicates her time to working with families with gatherings, a community garden, and space where you can spend quiet time. Light the Way has been in business for 18 years. Kimmy and her mom, Carolyn, would like you to stop in and say hi. As well, our services of consultations, Reiki, massage, hypnosis, and CCT, we have a gift shop. Books, candles, and essential oils, jewelry, gift certificates are always available. Just 5 minutes from Toledo in Lambertville, Michigan, located at 8050 Summerfeld Road. Call us at 734-854-1514. We're open 6 days a week. On call 24 hours a day for you at 734-854-1514 or visit www.lighttheway.com.
Hi, it's Kimmy. Would you like to join me for one of Ohio's greatest spiritual trade fairs? Join me and Donna Psaki on May 17th and May 18th at the Universal Life Expo. Together, we'll be sharing messages about life, love, laughter, and community. I will be speaking on Saturday and Donna will be speaking on Sunday. It's called Let It Shine, Universal Light Expo, located downtown Columbus at Veterans Memorial on Broad Street. You can go to www.uleexpo.com for more information.
And welcome back to Interviews. I'm Donna Vasaki. Kimmy's not with us today, but we have a very special guest, Nick Askew, a filmmaker, a poet, and we've been having a delightful conversation. And we've been talking about the films that you make and the people and how they are unencumbered, Nick. You used the word unencumbered, and you called it naked.
Oh, yeah, but you should add that in the break, so whenever everyone else is listening.
That was in the break when we talked about naked
films. You outed yourself. It's like, oh, not as a psychic, as, I don't know, is that what you said?
I came out of the closet as a woo-woo, I call it, a spiritual person, and that, and how you can get into these conversations, and you are just open and who you are, and then all of a sudden afterwards you go, oh my God, what did I say? You know, didn't follow a script or project the image that you want to project. And that's what you do when you film so many people. When you create these portraits, you get them at their nakedness.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. I make naked films. There you go. Actually, making a lot more money. those kind of naked films. Well, not yet, anyway. But the components of that. How does someone get to being naked? And there are all sorts of elements in it. Like I was telling you earlier, I think I've started to go and. I won't say teach this because how can I teach someone that? But I've recognized the component parts. So when you get down and you go, well, we've got a camera here and you want to communicate this, like who you are or the sense of your contribution in the world, how do you do it? Stick a camera in front of you and then you act like a someone completely different. That's generally what happens. You know, YouTube's full of that. People shouting at the world what they think the world needs to hear in order to get the world to do what they want them to do. It's crap. it's so draining. But you don't need to be like that. And so when you look at the component parts, I think there's this space between people and there's this kind of implicit. You know, one of the things I recognize about myself is like, I don't care. It's like, I don't care who you are. I have no control. It's not my business. I'm just going to see what I can see. It's like, and I never realized that's what I was doing, but people would always admit everything. It's almost like I'd just meet someone and they would just like talking totally inappropriately about something, except it wasn't inappropriate. So I hold, you know, I hold a lot of secrets. Well, why would I tell anyone, you know? It's just not. It doesn't add. I can remember filming people sometimes, and they would say stuff on camera, and you just think, why did you say that? You didn't need to. And they would, but I'd never use it. I just trash it. It's like, because it's just drama. It's not useful to the world. And then sometimes they'd say something that was like completely and utterly shocking in the way they were when they say it, and you think, that is extraordinary. Like, the way you were there was just quite extraordinary. Like, I can't believe how courageous you've been by saying that, and I just got this real sense that if people see this and are paying attention, they then have the visceral experience of it being okay to do the same. And that's kind of, that's good. I like that.
That's beautiful.
No, I can. I have the same experience. So now I'm thinking about the psychic thing, of course. But we're all, you know, everyone's psychic in some respects, and you can choose not to notice it unconsciously or notice it. You know, I recognize that.
I think people are really being nudged now. You mentioned this before about when you kind of got this message that, oh, I'm supposed to do films. I think more and more people are getting a nudge. And I don't know if we're just more aware of it or the messages are coming in stronger in that, but I think more and more, and I know a lot of people are like, I know I'm supposed to be doing something, but I'm not quite sure what it is. Or they get the inkling of what it is, but they're afraid to take the leap. And I think that's where a lot of us are right now. The universe is pushing us, saying, okay, it's time. It's time for us to step into who we are and to follow our dream, our path, whatever it is. And it's hard. You know, it's hard for a lot of people.
Yeah, I always have a... I think you're right. There's this uncomfortableness, dis-ease with, I mean, no, not disease, but this sense of not ease, And right. I think that's probably when one transforms, and I don't mean change, you know, any fool can change, and then you could change into something ridiculously not useful. But transformation is always seems a little bit more effortful and sometimes gentle, but there's this kind of sense of reckoning with it. And one of the things I noticed was people were very uncomfortable. So you're looking for answers, but you don't actually even know what the questions are. So you'd be sitting in your job thinking, well, last year it was all right, and now I just feel tragically useless here, and like I'm not meant to be here, and I have no clue what question even to answer. Or inside their marriages, inside, you know, any aspect of life, it's like there's something else, and I have no clue whether to look up or down or round or left or right behind me. No idea. And I think that's a hallmark almost of transformation. And it becomes very uncomfortable. You know, I've been very uncomfortable doing this. You know, sometimes I catch myself and thinking, wow, this is just totally, I have no idea where my next step is. I really don't. And then I catch myself going, oh, well, but that's the point.
So are you comfortable with that? Because I'm in that space a lot lately, too. It's like I have no idea what my next step is. And I want to see the big picture, know exactly where I'm going and what it's supposed to look like. And then I'll know what to do. And I'm not getting that. And so all we can do is take the next step. The message I get is walk through the doors as they're opened and just trust, you know. And that's all we can do. Well, we're not getting the big picture.
There's a real profound paradox in all of this, in that it's totally inexplicable, really. I mean, I know we spend our lives trying to explain it. And there are lots of books that tell you how it is or intimate how it might be. But we don't really know. I remember stumbling into that fact. It's like, or that sense, it's like, oh, well, there's a more than vague chance that I will never understand how it works. And actually, understanding how it works won't make it work any different. So, I'm off the hook. I can just, like, get on with now. And but then I realized, the reason that seems more comfortable for me now is that I realize that everything is totally uncertain. Apart from one thing, and that's that it never ends. And so there's almost like something in me that would never die, and so having a sense of that makes all the, you know, this disconcerting uncertainty, if you could put those two words next door to each other, they sound a bit clumsy, but with all that uncertainty. It's okay, because underneath it all, it's okay. I know it. I just know it. I don't believe it. I know it. And so that helps. It doesn't mean that it doesn't get uncomfortable. I think it always gets uncomfortable in some respect. I'm not sure there is a life that one can live that doesn't have discomfort. It's almost... Well, maybe there is. Maybe I missed the point. Maybe that's what I should be aiming for. But I don't think one should be aiming for anything in many respects. Because what I've noticed is when I'm having conversations and I film them, in that conversation, as we're lost, we're not aiming for anything. We completely forgot that we were trying to become something. And it feels very different. And I think it's kind of catching, if you notice it. And of course, now my job is to come out from behind the camera a lot more. I didn't used to do that. And so I started to do that quite a lot now. And, you know, I thought, I better get into the world now. And so I'm doing a lot of speaking and teaching, as I explained before, but just going with groups of people and going, how do we show up on this camera that I've got, which is a cool camera, but I know how to use it, but let's see if we can all turn up on camera together and make something useful so people can see us. And if they can see us, then they can be together as us and we can do some cool stuff. You know, we can not change the world, because I don't think the world needs changing necessarily. We spend their lives trying to change the world, unknowingly missing the obvious thing that maybe it's the experience of our own life that we perhaps need to have a look at first.
I think it's we that we need to change. And now as we shift we are and live from our, you know, our true being, that will shift the world. But it's, we have to start with us. We have to, and it's not changed so much as it's just remembering and becoming who we are. Not deciding we need to be this outside person.
There is no, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. It's like, I know that there are things that we can become and we can get better at this and that and whatever, but genuinely, when I'm in a film conversation, and not in all of them, but in some of them, the sense is, when I'm looking, is like, everything's cool. There is no one that you have to be or become. There's no one you can become. Not now.
You just have to be you, right?
Well, whatever that means. Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, but as soon as you start trying to define it, it kind of slips out your hands. So there's this kind of much gentler experience of just forgetting all that and having a conversation. Then, of course, after the conversation, you go, oh, God, what did I say? It's like, damn, it's on film. I wonder how I'll come over and all those things. But for the duration of the conversation, with all its words and space and all that kind of stuff, we'd kind of completely forgotten that we weren't important, you know, or had to see someone or had to come over or something. And that just all fell away. And those conversations are amazing. And we have them. I mean, I think everyone has them. Maybe we don't string so many of them together in a single day, but we could do. And I think some people do and some people do less. But we don't notice that that's important. Because what's the point? I mean, the conversation we're having is pretty much pointless, isn't it? It's like, I don't think we learned how to become amazingly wealthy out of it. Waste of time. Come on, get on with it. Booked a guest, had the 7 top ways to become a billionaire in under 5 minutes, all your money back. But I think that there is a point to those conversations and that way of being with people, because it's the point. It's the point of an experience. And you could be doing anything. You could even be learning how to get immensely wealthy in under 5 minutes. If you had your eyes on the ground here and now, that would probably be cool. But I think we don't notice, because I forget sometimes, you know. I catch myself just like in the place where I'm trying to work everything out and go, well, God, how am I going to do this? And I do recognize that, you know, sometimes that's vaguely useful. But generally, I'm missing the experience of my life when I do that.
Mm-hmm. So it's all about being present, you know, in the moment. And that's where the experience is.
But
Nick,
it's like the word cool. Sorry. You know, one can never say one's cool, because as soon as you say you're cool, you're not cool. And it's almost like being present. As soon as you start to think about, well, how do I be present? You can't be present. It's just going to happen. It's like, I've never meditated and done that, but learning to meditate seems kind of absurd. And I'm sure that it works, and you go through a process, and then suddenly, whoo. But we probably meditate much more than we know. You know, when you're doing something that you really love doing, and, you know, you're not thinking about anything else, that probably is the definition of meditation.
It is.
I might.
And Nick, we have to wrap this up. I am so sorry to end this conversation. We've been talking to Nick Askew, a filmmaker, poet, amazing conversationalist, artist. His website is nickaskew.com, nickaskew.com. And it's been so wonderful to share with you today. Thank you so much for being with us.
I should add, and I never do, but I did write myself a note because I'm always getting told off, that I since 2005, I've sent a film out every week. Well, say not a film, a human portrait. So I have a list on my site. And each Monday, out shoots some incredible soul in this kind of quietly provocative black and white way. There you go. That's my advert.
All right. Well, thank you. Check out his website because he has beautiful, beautiful, soul-touching films on there. And thank you for being with us on interviews this Monday. It was so good to be with you and share our conversation with you. Next week, our guest will be Panache Desai, so I hope you can join us then. And join us again on interviews.
Interviews with Kimmy Rose and Donna Visaki can be heard here every Monday on the PBS Radio Network at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on Station 1. Visit Kimmy on her website at kimmyrose.com and Donna on her website at bellaspark.com. Thank you for joining us today.